This is Carol Foster of 2 Timothy 2:15 Resources, and I am so excited that you're going to join me today as we study God's Word. The response new Messianic believers give when asked why they initially visited a Messianic congregation is, "We knew there had to be more." As we study together, we will begin to see that yes, indeed, there has to be more. For additional study aids to assist you in studying along with us, go to our website, sectim.org. Welcome back. I have a visitor this last couple sessions that I'm just so pleased to welcome. Jonah, welcome back.
Thank you.
We've been talking about the book of Yaakov and discussing how it's been so appropriate for today and the misconceptions that many people have. Mm-hmm. Our latest discussion was on the introduction of works as being proving our faith.
Yes.
Through the works that we've done. And earlier we were talking about the examples of Abraham and Rahab. You had some really good thoughts on that. Why don't you share?
Well, I mean, when you look at chapter 2 and verses 21 through 26, and it talks about Abraham and how he's justified by his works, and it wasn't necessarily the law that gave him his righteousness, but it was the fact that his faith and his works got him to that place to where he was building that relationship with God. It wasn't because that God commanded him to do it. It was because that he had the love for God that he went and did what mm-hmm. he did. And same thing with Rahab as well. She understood the will of God. She understood who God was, even though it wasn't to her necessarily benefit, to that she had a huge risk of possibly being destroyed with her community. And it was only because of God's grace that she ended up living, but she still knew that even though her possible death was according to the will of God, that she allowed it to keep going. And because of that, she had that faith in God. She knew that God was going to take care of her. And so that was counted to her as faith, and that is what allowed her to be saved, in a sense, from the destruction of Jericho.
Right. One of the things that I found with Abraham is that his faith was demonstrated with works from the very beginning.
Yes.
His father was a pagan priest. Mm-hmm. And he had an encounter with the living God. And Abraham was told, go. And he went. Mm-hmm. His faith then was put into action. He went. He then developed that relationship even more by being obedient and doing what he was told, even to the point that when God told him, well, actually the visitor told him that they were going to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah, and his nephew was there.
Yeah.
The relationship was such that he could have a discussion with God, mm-hmm. which is the first recounted discussion that we really have, where God paid attention to what his friend, his faithful friend, was saying. You know, please, if there be 50 righteous people, mm-hmm. if there be 20 righteous people. So it was actually a relationship, a give and take relationship there. And then when he was told, go and sacrifice your son, he did it. He got up mm-hmm. and went. And that faith had been built up through obedience and relationship, that he knew that even if he were to kill Yitzhak, mm-hmm. Isaac, that God had told him that he would be the father of nations,
yes.
and that he would live. Mm-hmm. Even if God had to resurrect him from the dead, that promise would come true. So it wasn't just the fact that Abraham believed that there was a God.
Yeah.
There had been that developed relationship.
Yes.
That's the first time that we see two words. We first see the word worship. The word worship has never been used in the Bible until then. Abraham took Isaac and he told his men, we're going to go worship the Lord. And then the other one is where God actually told him, you are my friend.
Wow.
And the friend is a two-way relationship. Mm-hmm. You don't have a friend if you don't build that relationship.
Yes.
And then with Rahab, as you said, was going to be killed, not necessarily just by the Israelites, but by her own people.
Mm-hmm.
She was a traitor.
Yes.
She hid the spies. Now, She had faith because she saw what the Israelites, God, had done. Mm-hmm. And even though she didn't have a personal relationship, she says, I know what your God has done for you. And I believe that he is God. And if he does it for you, he'll do it for me. So again, there's faith with works. We so many times have head knowledge.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
But it never goes any farther than head knowledge. We see in verse 24, you see, well, let's go back and says that in verse 22, you see that faith was working with his works. And as a result of the works, faith was perfected. That is such a complete statement about the actions. Our faith is perfected. We build that relationship by stepping out and saying, okay, Lord, I'll do it.
Yeah. I think that goes back to chapter 1 again with
yes,
the endurance.
Absolutely.
It says, through that endurance, you are perfected.
It not only shows the endurance, but it shows the mind. I mean, if I were Abraham, mm-hmm. and he told me, okay, pack up your things and all your belongings and leave. I'm not going to tell you where you're going to go, but just leave. He was wealthy.
Yeah.
Just think of the herds of animals that he had and the entourage. It wasn't just him and his wife. I mean, he had this huge entourage that went with him. To just say, okay, I'll go. There's that dependence, that relationship that comes. And to know that I'm going to take those wavering thoughts. I think so many times we think of the patriarchs and we think, well, they never wondered. You know, we put them in this level of faith where they just did it. You know, they never even thought about it. But can you imagine what Abraham was thinking?
I mean, to be in that position, you really have to have some sort of faith. To go from probably being into some sort of paganism, as
yes.
his father was an idol maker, to just all of a sudden following this God that appeared to him is unbelievable. And it wasn't until he started really following and until he really started showing and proving himself by doing those works, by actually leaving, by actually going to where he was called, by getting rid of what he was supposed to get rid of, that God built that relationship with
Absolutely.
Him.
And later on in the book of Yaakov, it says that your faith, your works are proof of your faith.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing with Rahab. I mean, she had no idea who this God was.
Yes. She, I mean, for her, she only knew what's the stories. They only knew that the people of Israel were coming, that they had taken out all mm-hmm. the cities, that they were crossed, that they had taken out the Egyptians, and that they had crossed the seas and all these things. But yet she had never even seen anything firsthand. All she did was hear. But then again, hearing is what builds faith.
That's right. But it doesn't build faith unless there's some action that goes with
yes.
it. You can hear all you want, mm-hmm. and it doesn't do it. I think it's really interesting that he used such diverse people to show this.
Oh, yes.
Abraham, who we look at as a picture of righteousness, although mm-hmm. there are things in his life that if you go back and look at, you see he as well slipped.
Mm-hmm.
And then a prostitute.
Yes, definitely.
You know, both have the same faith, and were both saved by their works. Or were actually saved by the faith and proved by their works.
Mm-hmm. It just shows the Lord's acceptance and, once again, non-partiality with us.
Yes, absolutely. And the last verse says, "For just as the body without the spirit is dead, so is faith without works is dead." There's no life. There's no vitality. There's nothing to prove that yeah. your spiritual life is alive.
Yeah, it's just a body without a spirit is just an empty shell.
Absolutely.
Waiting to be filled, waiting for something more. And that's what our faith is without works. It's just waiting for something more. It's God waiting for something more.
Right. We've been called to be separate.
Yes.
A holy people. And how do people know that we're set apart, that we're holy?
Well, you don't if you're not practicing, if you're not out there really showing, if you're not living your life. I mean, one of the greatest sayings there is teach the Bible, but use words if necessary.
Right, right. And, you know, we're walking. testimonies.
Yes.
We should be walking testimonies. Again, we were talking earlier, and you brought up the fact that in this next chapter, that he really is addressing teachers. You had some good thoughts about that. Why don't you share them?
I think it's really interesting how he says, not everybody, don't let there be many teachers. And I was really reading into this, because today there's, I mean, just denominations, there's 40,000 different ones alone. And in those denominations, there's millions of teachers. And yet here we see in James to not have that many, to not have such great numbers. And for one of the reasons I was reading about it is because that teachers come under stricter judgment. Because those teachers are the ones that are leading those flocks. They are the ones that are really, that are in charge. And so when they get to heaven, then not only do they have to give an account for their own lives, but everything that they had taught to every single person who ever listened to them. As well as being a teacher, it's interesting that in the same area he talks about wisdom. In chapter 1, he talks about there's there's godly wisdom and that you need to ask for it. With chances are that with so many teachers that they aren't all right on, that
right.
they aren't necessarily having God wisdom, but this natural, earthly, and demonic wisdom that James has already addressed.
Well, and many people, as difficult as it is to say, envy a position of a teacher.
Oh, yes.
Or of a deacon, or of an elder, or even that of a pastor.
Yeah.
And strive for it with unholy reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Even they may not realize why. But because a teacher is accountable, that takes such a weight on the teacher to make sure that what they are teaching is the word.
Yeah.
And the responsibility, as you said, they were happening. There's many scriptures that give credence to that, such as, if you lead one of the least of mine astray, better be that a millstone tied around your neck. We see in the book of Revelations that one of the churches was chided, the fact that they were allowing just anybody to teach, even though if they knew they weren't teaching appropriately, they were still allowing them to teach. Just because you're a teacher doesn't mean that you're a mature believer.
Yeah.
And that you're teaching the word to the people that need to be taught at the moment. We've all sat underneath instructors in school who are, I'm trying to think of a nice way to say this, who shouldn't be teaching.
Yeah.
So many of them, especially I think when you get into the grad, post-grad level, that just want to show you how much they know and how little you know.
Mm-hmm.
So there's real no learning taking place.
I think one thing with teachers is that not everybody's called to be a teacher.
No.
It's a gift that's given. And if everybody's a teacher, then who's going to listen? I mean, it's with it being a gift, you have to have the ability to teach. You have to have the skill to teach, because what I found a lot of times being a student is that sitting under teachers is they know a lot about what they're talking about. They know it from cover to cover. They could tell you anything you need to know about it, but to teach it isn't really what they're good at. And that could be the case for some, for probably lots of teachers in the churches, is that they know that they know that they know what's going on in the Bible, and they know all these things. They have all this knowledge, yet they just don't do it in such a way that is learning friendly.
Right, absolutely. And learning has not taken place unless behavior or thoughts have changed.
Yeah.
So you can sit underneath people that I sat underneath an instructor who could quote the entire book of John.
Wow.
But this person also spoke fluent Hebrew and Greek. But very, very difficult to sit under.
I bet.
Very difficult to sit under. We had to remind him one time, he was writing an assignment on the board, and we had to remind him he was writing in Hebrew. We had no idea what he wanted us to do. So, I mean, you know, these kind of things. Also, I think every person needs a teacher in their life or a mentor. It doesn't matter what level you're teaching on. If you're a pastor, you should have a teacher or a mentor in your life. That's that accountability. mm-hmm. that comes. You have to have someone that you can say, I need to learn from you. I need to be accountable for what I'm doing to someone. And I think that comes with a student-teacher relationship.
Yes.
That's why many of us shouldn't be teachers. Mm-hmm. Also, it's very difficult to know what a multitude of teachers are teaching.
Yeah, it's very hard to follow along with there being so many teachers mm-hmm. out there. I mean, there's so many, just as in the world, there's so many latest craves in the church. I mean, you have all these new theologies that are constantly coming out that you think about for a second and you say, well, we know that that's not biblical. We know that that's not right. However, there's one teacher or groups of teachers that are teaching this that are drawing in crowd after crowd after crowd and listening to this. And it becomes not only detrimental to the teacher, but it becomes detrimental to the people who are listening.
Right. And it's actually detrimental to the faith.
Yes.
Because so many things that they're teaching has no accountability. Mm-hmm. So people see them walking out their lives. Again, like the hyper grace.
Yeah.
You know, well, I'm a believer. Well, you know, you were drunk in the bar last night. Mm-hmm. Show me how that shows me Messiah.
Yeah. I mean, as we said, everybody falls short of the glory of God. However, it's about what you do after you fall.
Right.
You know, if you just keep on doing what you're doing, then is that really faith? Is that the works that God is wanting? No, it's all about the faith and the works that you try. Yes, we all mess up, but what are you doing after that? Are you trying to turn around? Are you trying to repent? Are you confessing? Are you now trying to build that faith and show God that you are building that relationship, that you are putting the time and the effort and the works that He's required?
And this is exactly what James is saying.
Yes.
He's saying, okay, you say you have your faith.
Mm-hmm.
Now let me see it.
Yeah.
Let me see it. And if you don't know what that looks like, let me show you mm-hmm. what it looks like. He's really doing the work of a teacher here. He really is. I also thought that it was extremely interesting as he continued on that, and he was talking about the fact that we can then control our mind and our actions. Now, our mind is much harder. It's kind of like working with Jell-O sometimes, but we do have the ability to work at it.
Yes.
And teachers need to be able to tell that to their students. They need to do that encouraging. They need to, again, it's a relationship.
Mm-hmm. I think as a student in school, you have to understand that your mind is able to learn anything. You can learn languages, you can learn math, you can learn science, anything you can come across. So the same way is that you can teach your mind how to be submissive to mm-hmm. God, you need to come and put yourself in a posture that says, I'm going to only think godly thoughts. And as soon as something comes up that is outside of the mind of Messiah, I'm going to condemn it. I'm going to just cut it off right there, because if you do that, you cut those thoughts off then.
Right.
That lust that conceives sin is then cut off.
Right. You can stop that progress anywhere along the line.
Yeah.
Just by making that conscious effort to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You actually can. What do you think about the fact that when a teacher is not teaching the truth, however, people, like you were saying before, that they draw mass amount of people. They're tickling somebody's ear. Mm-hmm. They like that. How difficult do you think it is for someone to make that change, to realize that change, or to even know that there is a change that needs to be made?
As the teacher or the student?
As a student.
As a student, it's very difficult. Being in the Messianic movement and the One New Man movement, I've come across a lot of my personal friends or even mentors that have come to the knowledge through me sharing or just listening out to other Messianic teachers, realizing that everything in the Christian church isn't necessarily right on. However, they come to the conclusion, the majority of the time I find that it's just traditional. But yet again, the traditions of men nullify the Word of God. And just based on experience, I found that most of these people that do come to this realization that it is just some tradition or it is something that is just widely believed, however not biblical, they just remain in it because they spent their entire life this way. And what happens is they kind of become either upset and leave, either with no faith, or they stay where they are and just keep covering it up as if nothing's going on, unfortunately.
Absolutely right. And I think that one of the sad things about teachers today is that they, and I use the word regurgitate, but they spill out what they've been taught.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easier to do that than it is to challenge themselves on any new revelation. Also, the fact that people may know that it's wrong, and I'm thinking right now of some of the pagan holidays, they will admit to you that this is not right, but it's too hard to swim upstream.
It's very hard to make big changes like that. I know with our congregation, when we first made the switch over from doing these traditional Christian things, such as Easter and Christmas, and to switch over to Shabbat instead of Sunday and everything, I mean, we were the biggest church in our area, and we went down to one of the smallest in a couple of months because it was just so hard to grasp, and it was so unusual, and it was so different, yet we knew that it was right on. But even knowing, even many people who have acknowledged that it was right still have come to the conclusion, even though it's right, I don't want to do it because that's not what everybody does. It's very detrimental to the church in the, with those situations.
It really is. And as you said, though, unfortunately, the many teachers that advocate, well, yes, I know that's true, but it's difficult to do. I'm not going to do it. They are will be held accountable.
Yes.
They will be held responsible not only for their actions, but for the ramifications with the, for their students.
Yes.
Which is a very weighty matter. I mean, I wouldn't want to stand before the Father and say, yes, I knew, but.
No way.
I think that would be very difficult. Yes, I knew, but. Now, he goes on to talk about how to control one of the worst portions of our body, our tongue. You know, so many people say, well, I couldn't help myself. I said that. Or it just came out. And he likens the tongue to the bridle on a horse or the rudder on a ship, that our whole body and our representation to him, to the world, sometimes is controlled by our tongue.
Yeah, I mean, initially when I read this a couple of days ago, I pretty much took away that little things have big effect, that our little words, whether good or bad, have big effect. And that our tongue, if we can't control it to only speak life and blessing, that we will see greatness come. We will see blessing come. I really like the fact that he addresses the ideas of how people are blessing at one time yet cursing with the same mouth at another time. And it's partiality, it's hypocritical, it's double-mindedness, all these things that he keeps addressing.
Yes.
All in just this poor choice of language.
Absolutely. And the thought of the fact that we can bless God and then turn around and curse his creation, whom he loves, to me was very weighty when I thought about it. Very much so. And that the tongue, as we have seen in our own congregation, the tongue can cause so much damage. It's like a spark in a dry forest.
Yeah.
You live in the mountains. And you know how terrible that could be.
Oh, yeah.
It's devastating. And how just the spark of a derogatory comment or a, well, like Hasatan did in the garden. Do you really think?
Yeah.
That is one of the worst things in the world, I think, to say to a believer. But it can cause splits. It can cause hurts that will never, ever be rectified.
I really like what you said about judging the creation because, I mean, to someone who judges the creation, aren't you judging the Creator?
Mm-hmm.
And it even later talks about in chapter 4,
right.
It says you judge the law, and those who judge the law are judging the lawgiver as well. Who are you to judge God? Who are you to judge His creation, and who are you to judge His law? It's a very important thing. That when it comes to speaking about the tongue,
I think it goes back to the fact that knowing who we are, but knowing who He is.
Yeah.
That's all the time we have for today. Again, please join us next time as we continue our discussion. Thank you and shalom. Thank you for joining us today as we delve into the beautiful truths of God's Word to indeed discover that there has to be more. I pray that the Word applied to your daily life will bring a deeper understanding of His love letter written just to you. Let me remind you that we have additional study aids to assist you with our studies together on our website. It's secTIM.org. May this day fill you with the love of God, joy, and shalom. Nothing missing, nothing broken in your life.